up, everything? The semifinals of the NHL playoffs are set, and they are Wild! Except the Wild aren't actually one of the teams in them, and they're three of the four teams from last year. Oh well, we'll touch on that briefly before we enter a new off-season segment and dive deep into the 2G1C mailbag. It's been a long night already, so let's get started, and let's go Blues! Everyone, welcome to the Two Guys One Cup podcast. It is Thursday, June 10th, and we are live from the northernmost reaches of Baldwin, Missouri.
Is this Baldwin?
It is still technically, yes. The studios have moved from the very like southeasterly corner or southwesterly corner to the very northeasterly corner of Baldwin. So you know. But don't look for us.
Man, Baldwin's shaped funky.
It's weird. Not... It's like an hourglass, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of like it's next to Winchester to the west, but then it's also to the north of Winchester.
It's wild. It's a made-up city.
It is.
But I'll tell you, folks, get you some Truly Citrus Punch. That's some good shit. that's delicious.
You've already had one, yes?
No. No, I don't think I've had any of the citruses.
Oh, but no. You've had one tonight, though. A different one?
No.
No? Oh, you're stone cold sober.
Just, yeah.
Never mind. I was going to say, you already had one. That's why he thinks they're so great. Yeah, but never mind. This is a real opinion.
Oh, boy. You didn't like them?
No, I think they're good.
Okay. You know, we got a lot to talk about tonight. Ton of mailbag questions. I don't know if we'll even get to them all tonight. We might postpone some. Folks, it's a long summer.
If your question was good, we will answer it tonight. And if we wait till next time, then you know it just wasn't very good.
Yeah, you should have tried harder.
Maybe think before you ask the question. Well, I like how we ask for these and then we criticize them.
But I don't know about you.
What a terrible question.
Have you seen that clip? I know it's like ages old now, of the Twitch streamer who is like pissed off at people who wouldn't donate $5 to her and was just so patronizing, because we feel like that right now.
Yeah.
It's like $5 though, it's really not that much.
You can do better.
I'm providing you free content. It's like, no, you're asking for $5 for the content.
Look, if we just give you Steven's address, will you mail us money?
That's right.
In an envelope?
Yeah, I'm down.
No checks, please. Hard cash. Untraceable cash.
I would prefer it in Litecoin. The favored cryptocurrency of the Two Guys, One Cup podcast.
I think we could start one, yeah?
Yeah, for sure. What Cup coin?
Cup coin.
Yeah, that probably already exists. All right, folks. The exciting news of the week for the Blues is that they get the 16th overall pick, thanks to Montreal. The highest the Blues have drafted since the year they picked Schwartz at 14 and traded up to pick Tarasenko at 16. Does that portend good things for the Blues? Probably not. What do you think about that? Ian Peters there.
It's good. It's great. It's good stuff. I'm glad that it's closer to a top 10 pick, because I feel like, and we get a mailbag question about this later, we haven't had a high pick, like a very high pick at all, since like Petrangelo in 2008, who was number 4.
Mm-hmm.
And prior to that was like Johnson, who was number 1, and we all know how that went. And we had a couple years there, we had like 3 first round picks, and they're all kind of here and there when we were in the rebuild. But yeah, I'd like to see us have one, because we need to restock the cover board, because it's bare, it's empty.
Yeah.
I really, we need anything. But yeah, having a potential, a potentially highly valued prospect would be nice. And it's, the potential for that is greater at the 16th
higher,
pick.
For
higher,
sure.
Yes.
No, you were right. I wasn't correcting you. I was just adding.
I'm just used to it.
Jesus. Brutal. Ian, you did the scouting. You looked at some players that...
Well.
You did the scouting. You were in the stands.
Right.
You
said,
traveled
fuck COVID.
To Kitchener, Rimouski, and Peterborough, even though they didn't have games this year. And you asked people on the street.
They said, "Where's your mask?" And I said, "I'm not from this
country.
I'm
an American. We don't make masks in America.
We don't have COVID here."
That's right. We killed that years ago, just like we'll kill you.
With Lysol.
But yeah, you looked up some scouting reports on these guys, and what did you find?
Yeah, I wanted to see what the rankings for this 2021 NHL draft are, and basically who would possibly be available at the 16th pick. So the Hockey Writers and Sporting News had Francesco Pinelli, who is a 6'1", 185 pounds.
He's just a Canadian, he's not Italian.
No, he's not. He's just from Canada. He's a center. He plays for Kitchener in the OHL. Pinelli is... descriptions are from NHL.com, so thank you, NHL.com. Mm-hmm. Pinelli is an elite skater with excellent puck pursuit.
Francesco Paolo Pinelli is his full name. Or Pinelli.
But where's he from?
Hamilton.
Terrible. I don't want him.
No, me neither.
Even though he's an elite skater with excellent puck pursuit, work ethic, and a high compete level. What's the difference between work ethic and a high compete level?
There is no level.
Okay. Yeah.
They just needed three things for the for the syntax of the rhythm.
The 18-year-old can contribute on the power play and penalty kill and projects to be a reliable two-way player in the NHL. He scored 11 points, 5 goals, 6 assists, and 13 games on loan with, oh boy,
HDD Jesenice.
Jesenice and the Alps Jesenice, Hockey League.
Probably, or something.
They have an Alps Hockey League, but it's in Slovenia. Or it's partly in
Slovenia. That's where part of the Alps are.
I don't believe it. I'll ask what's-his-face over on the LA Kings, and he can tell me.
Oh, old Anji?
Yeah.
You ever been to Slovenia, John?
Pinelli will play for the Canada and the World U18 Championship, which seems to be a theme amongst these players. They're very good, so therefore they play in
this
tournament.
He had 11 points in the last U18.
Yeah.
So he'll be in the U20s this year, or he'll be in the U18s again?
No, he said he'll play for the World U18 Championship.
Maybe this is an older report and he was at that U18.
Oh, yeah.
I'll tell you this, though, didn't score a single point for Kitchener this season, so basically worthless.
Useless. Sportsnet and TSN, the two leading Canadian, I want to say Canadian, mm-hmm. the Canadian sports folks were saying that Zachary Bolduc?
Yeah, Bolduc.
I don't like that name. I'm sorry, Zachary. 6'1", 175 pounds, center from playing for Rimouski of the QMJHL.
Are these actual mock drafts that have chosen us for us?
No, this is just the 16th ranked
skater.
Gotcha. So we could pick someone different, but if you're going to pick best available,
yeah.
They're all centers.
No. This guy, Zachary Bolduc, is from Trois-Rivières.
So yeah, it's not Bolduc at all.
No,
right?
It's
Bolduc.
It's Bolduc.
And it's probably just Bolduc.
Yeah.
Nailed it. We got it. is an excellent skater with good hockey IQ and an ability to finish play, as you would hope so.
Yeah.
When you're a good hockey player. It says he'll also, or no, he's not going to play for the U18. He is terrible. he's 18-year-old who scored 29 points, 10 goals, and 19 assists, and 3 power play goals in 27 games. I was going to say with what weird European team, but actually the QMJHL did play games this year.
That's true.
So good for them.
He played alongside the ghost of Alexei Lafreniere for Rimouski. So good for them.
See, he succeeded where
other teams
couldn't.
Had failed. Exactly.
NHL.com, just regular old NHL.com, who you think would be the overlord for all of these things, gives us Mason McTavish, a 6'1", 207 pound center from Peterborough of the OHL. McTavish is a powerful skater with balance and solid puck protection ability. The 18-year-old scored 11 points, 9 goals, and 2 assists in 13 games on loan with ECH Olten in the Swiss League, the second highest professional league in Switzerland. He'll play for Canada in the World U18 Championship.
Fantastic. McTavish, that's a nice Scottish name. Let's find out his hometown, but keep talking because it'll take me a second.
They're all centers.
Ian, I'm sure, but Jesus died for their sins.
Oh, hey. Oh, I was like, what the fuck? But you're right, you got him.
Mason McTavish, ironically, was actually born in Zurich, Switzerland.
What?
But he's of Canadian ancestry or something. So.
But he's Swiss.
Yeah, that's what they say.
I love it. I want him. I also saw him going considerably higher in a couple drafts or a couple rankings, so maybe he's not available. They're all centers. I don't know if we necessarily need centers, but again, you're not really drafting for need. When these guys are going to be coming into the league in 3 or 4 years, you're drafting for best player. But also, I personally, of all the positions in hockey,
centers.
I love centers.
Yeah.
You know, I've always told people, I maintain, Steven, that I love centers.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a bold take. But yeah. A lot of people fight you on that, but that's one you have always stood by.
I seem to stop them before they start the fight.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. They almost don't say anything and just accept it as an obvious fact.
That's almost like there's just someone waiting in line at Arby's with me. But, you know, I'm like, don't even.
So there's a win.
Don't even talk to me about centers, boy.
No, we can't talk about centers, Ian. But what we can talk about is our newest segment on the 2G1C podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the first ever installment of Blues Fans Want the D.
Girls all over the internet. They on Twitter, they on Facebook, they on Instagram, they everywhere. They on Tumblr, and they want the D. They want it. And 9 times out of 10, they want the D from me.
With much of the conversation on the Blues offseason centering around the blue line, no pun intended, that is hard to navigate when you write about the team for, you know, semi-professionally.
Blue.
The Blues blue line is blue when the blue line blues are bluing. I blew myself. And
this episode is unhinged.
We already had like a, I don't know, like close to 2 hours, I would think, soccer episode, which, check it out, folks, probably our most detailed ever, but not our, I'm just kidding, I enjoyed it quite a bit. But
I learned that Europe is not a country.
No,
it's a
continent with many countries inside of it.
Turkey is also part of.
Yeah, but kind of half and half. You know how they
do. That's kind of their thing, yeah.
Because Europe didn't want to own all of Turkey. They didn't want all that business.
We just want the good part.
That's right. Give us Constantinople. Asia can take the rest. It's not Constantinople anymore. It's Istanbul. That's the whole thing. Mm. All right. Our point is, this show could go off the rails at any second. But right now, it's still on the rails. That's how off the rails it could go. Jamie Oleksiak is a big rig. He's on the rails. The Blues, as I was saying, Blues fans want a defensive addition this summer. I don't think that's actually correct or a major concern, but in doing our due diligence as a podcast...
Yeah, Jeremy Rutherford said it's one of the needs.
I think our defense does need to improve, but I think it's more about... That was the chair. I think it's more about solidifying and creating an identity than it is adding big pieces.
Mm-hmm.
But let's do it. We're going to start this segment, and we're going to go through some of the top free agent and maybe even trade acquisition targets on defense. And we'll go a deep dive into them and look at what's really underneath the surface. Starting with everyone's favorite, Blues fans' favorite homeboy. Why did I say homeboy? Oh my God. Can we quit? Can we end the podcast there?
See, that's
why... What the hell possessed me to say homeboy?
This is why this podcast is going to get better, because there's nowhere to
there's no getting worse. It's not an option. Jamie Oleksiak, 6'7", 255 pounds. I don't care about that. Those stats super much, but it is the only reason any Blues fan knows about
this guy. He's a big boy.
Guy.
They love him.
That's right. He is a left-handed shot and had 17 points as his max in a season. He was -9 over the past 2 years. He never averaged more than 17.47 per game until last season, in which he averaged 20.29. He went to school with Dougie Hamilton, so in a way, it's basically like signing Dougie Hamilton. He was 16th on the Stars in goals above replacement and wins above replacement. If you look here at their expected goals percentage chart, he was right in the middle of the pack. He had... 2.25 XGF per 60, 1.86 XGA per 60 for a differential of 0.36. He is not a goal creator. on the even strength, but he is a goal suppressor, pretty strong XGA. No, you know, goal scoring or point scoring to speak of. And Evolving Hockey is projecting a 5-year, $4.18 million contract for him.
Woof.
No thanks. We'll get through it. Saad Youssef of The Athletic looked at Dallas's player performance in relation to their contract. He did put Jamie Oleksiak pretty high, along with Miro Heiskanen on defense. He was a 0.96 overvalue, but of course he was on a $2.14 million cap hit, which means that at a $5 million cap hit, probably not overvalued, or undervalued, rather. But ultimately, I don't mean to burst fans' bubbles, but I think pretty likely Jamie Oleksiak isn't actually going anywhere.
Yeah.
In Saad Youssef's piece on the Perfect Stars offseason, he said, "The top priority for the Stars in-house when it comes to unrestricted free agents is trying to bring back Jamie Oleksiak. Dallas showed its intentions in wanting to do that when it held on to Oleksiak at the trade deadline this season, and his progression as an NHL defenseman certainly warrants that consideration. The question will be at what cost. For the Stars, getting Oleksiak at 3 years for $3 million to $4 million per season would be ideal. Now, Oleksiak is 28 years old, coming off a stellar few seasons, so this might be his biggest opportunity to cash out on the open market, and another team may blow that money figure out of the water. But Oleksiak has expressed interest in returning to Dallas, and this is a Perfect Stars offseason, so let's say Oleksiak is back for 3 years at $3.5 million per season." Now that number, I don't barf as much at. From his Stars offseason priorities article, he also said bringing back Jamie Oleksiak was an article, a priority. He said, "Let's stick with that second defensive pair. Stars general manager Jim Nill made it clear at the trade deadline, both in actions and words, that Jamie Oleksiak is part of the Stars' future. Since returning from his hockey internship in Pittsburgh, Oleksiak has been a productive player and a good defensive partner for Heiskanen. Those things are separate, by the way. Yes, Heiskanen also made Roman Polak look like a formidable everyday NHL defenseman.
Boom.
But Oleksiak is different. He's capable of holding his own as well, and his size provides the Stars with a unique element that they don't otherwise have on the roster. Oleksiak, who is set to be an unrestricted free agent, likes it in Dallas, and the Stars like Oleksiak." This guy does not like pronouns. "But how much do the Stars value him as a fourth defenseman, and is there a team that is willing to offer Oleksiak a figure he can't turn down? Regardless, potentially re-signing Oleksiak will be a slow move because the Stars will want to wait until after the expansion draft."
Oleksiak's like losing meaning in my brain now. Just the Oleksiak sound you're making.
I also asked my colleague, if you will, Sam Nestler of the Hockey Writers, about a few questions about Oleksiak. He said, "He's very valuable, to answer your first question. He was not great in his first stint in Dallas, but learned a lot in Pittsburgh and became a very good player. He started to use his body well and find ways to use his surprisingly good hands to provide some offense. While Miro Heiskanen can make a lot of people look good, Oleksiak has really fit in well as his partner. He is now a true top four defender in the league, in my opinion. In terms of available, it depends on what type of contract he is after. Dallas has said multiple times that they want to do anything they can to bring him back. With that being said, they do not have a ton of wiggle room with their cap, so unless Khudobin gets selected by Seattle, which probably won't happen, they will have to be smart with their Heiskanen extension in order to bring back Oleksiak. I think he comes back to Dallas, though, as they believe this may be an all-in season." With all of that said, I don't really have an abstract problem with signing Jamie Oleksiak. I have a more practical problem. I don't think he's bad. Mm-hmm. I just don't think he's anything. He's big. That's literally all we care about.
Yeah.
He's big. There's nothing he does exceptionally well. I'm not even sure he plays that physical a game. Like, nothing I read was like, oh, he's gritty. He clears bodies in front of the net.
Well, I mean, you see, we already have a tall, big guy in Colton Parayko, uh-huh. and that's fine and that's great, but he's not overly physical. He's not
right.
brutalizing people. So just because you're a tall, big guy doesn't necessarily mean that you're using that size to be physical.
Mm-hmm. Vince Dunn is a smaller guy, and he's physical more than some people on our team. So I just think it goes to the bigger narratives that we're having right now and the bigger questions we have to ask. But to me, this team has to be a lot more careful than just signing a big guy that's available because he's big and available. And I don't mean that as an insult to Jamie Oleksiak, but like, I don't think people are being very realistic about how, it may seem like an exaggeration, but this team is on a knife edge to me between possibly extending their cup window or at least building towards a new one fairly quickly versus really entering a long and painful and ugly rebuild. And I don't think Jamie Oleksiak necessarily makes that second thing a certainty, but the number of people who I feel like are like, well, you just go sign Jamie Oleksiak and the Blues are set for next season. I'm just like, nah.
Yeah, I can't believe that you think we're like one piece away from being in cup contention again and that Jamie Oleksiak is that piece.
Yeah.
Like, that's the piece. Yeah. Like, you lost Pietrangelo, Bouwmeester, all these guys, you know, Alan Maroon, all these dudes, Edmondson, and you're going to tell me, you know, you're going to lose one more in the expansion, and you're going to trade Dunn, potentially. But if we get Jamie Oleksiak, kind of makes up for all nine of those guys. Mm-hmm. Same thing, right? And it's like, no, man. And I get that's not, people aren't saying there are not going to be other moves, but like, that could be your biggest move, especially when there's not that much cap space wiggle room.
Mm-hmm.
Especially if you're like saying not re-signing Jaden Schwartz and his money's going, you know, part of that money's going towards Oleksiak and that's what you're making up the difference with. Just doesn't seem wise to me. Because the other thing I think of too is just what we have on defense. You got Falk, you've got Krug, you got Scandella, you got Parayko, you have Wallman, you have Bortuzzo, you have Vince Dunn right now, you have Perunovic, you have Mikkola. And now, but let's sign Jamie Oleksiak, and I'm sure the
Mikkola,
answer,
by the way, another guy who is very big and not physical.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, like,
Where are you fitting this guy in? I know you're making some moves. Maybe you're trading Dunn. Maybe Seattle's taking Mikkola, but you're still kind of stacked.
I think
back
people
there.
Convince themselves that it's a Parayko Oleksiak first pairing.
No.
And that ain't right, guys. That's just not, that's not factual. When I look at this team, I don't think the defense is that far. I don't think they're not, there's two problems. We let Alex Pietrangelo walk. We're not going to be that defense again. There's no getting back there.
Yeah,
the team can't
gone,
be built on
gone.
The kind of defense they played when they won the cup, because the best parts of that defense are gone, and those aren't pieces that you can just get back. So I think one of the mistakes this fan base makes, and I understand it, because for a whole generation we've been trained, you know, this is a team that's built from the blue line out, defense first. We've always had a strong defense. It's always had a lot of good personnel back there. And I don't think we have bad personnel back there. But I don't think the additions we need to make are on defense. I think if we're going to spend big money or make big moves to add people to this team, we need to add people on offense and then add complementary pieces on defense, if at all. Or at the very least, just settle on a defensive play style and settle on some pairings and get it right. And that's, it all comes to Berube to me a little bit, because it's like, as we've said 1,000 times now, and we'll say 1,000 more times, it seems like Armstrong brought personnel in to play a certain way, and Berube just doesn't want to play that way. And that's fine, I guess. But like, I don't know how long we can keep that charade going.
Yeah.
Just because he's the guy that won the cup here. Like, if the general manager is building a different team and the coach refuses to coach that team, one of them's got to go. And I have no questions which one I'm happier to sacrifice. And that's not just a shot at Craig Berube. It's a shot at the fact that there are very few, even passable GMs in the NHL at any one time. And Doug Armstrong has been very good for a long time now. And I'm not eager to give him up. I realize that he's aging and his time will come sooner than I'd like it to anyway, unless he's just one of these David Poile guys that stays until he's 80 and I don't get the feeling that's who he is. But like, other than, you know, I still want to stick with him. He's the guy. He's our ride or die, as far as I'm concerned. Even as big a mistake as I think Pietrangelo was, he's still the guy that's built several generations of a successful hockey team through several play styles of hockey, and there aren't a lot of GMs who can claim that anymore.
Yeah, that's the thing. I trust his direction with this team more than I trust, like, whatever coach is behind the bench. Like, it seems like our defense is built more for a transition style game, which is good, because I think that's the way this league is headed or is already there. But it does kind of feel like, at least with some fans, that we're still like, well, we got to punish them in front of that. We got to be able to take that space away. And it's like, I think we talked about it last time, you don't have to be this giant dude to take away space. You can be someone that's stick checking. You can be someone that's in the lanes at the right time. And then if you have a great first pass and you're a quick dude, you get it right up the ice. I mean, that's pretty much the Avalanche, you know, RIP the Avalanche, but that's like the Avalanche's whole thing, is that they don't have any, like, defensive back though, they're huge dudes. I mean, they have Cale Makar, who's just like an outstanding player, so that's something we don't have at all. But like, you can try and model yourself to be, you know, a lesser version of that. Just because you don't have those pieces doesn't mean you can't try to do some of what they're doing.
And Devon Taves, to me, I know I've gushed about him before, maybe one of the best defenders in the entire NHL. He's so good, and he's not big. He's 6'1", 195, 191. But he's just that good. And you don't... To me, it's just an ancient mindset that size equals being good at hockey. In fact, a lot of times, more and more today, I think size is to your detriment. If you're overly big...
If you don't have the foot speed.
Yeah. And I don't think Oleksiak's a bad skater, but... I know both of those people I read said, well, Miro Heiskanen can make a lot of people look good, but don't assume this is Miro Heiskanen. Maybe that's true. But he's not going to be with Miro Heiskanen here. And so we need to prepare for that if we think we're going to sign him. Now, as I said, I really don't think he leaves. I think the only way he leaves is if somebody blows him away with a bonkers contract. And do you want that to be us, fans? Well,
I was about to say, it shouldn't be us. And you know who it's going to be anyways, because they already tried.
Edmonton or somebody?
Winnipeg.
Winnipeg was all over
Oleksiak, and then they couldn't get it done. And they even talked about another podcast. Like, Friedman talked about how the Jets were like, or their GM was like pissed at himself for not being able to get that done. Because they need any defenseman up there, because they lost so many for that core. And it's like, okay, now he's a UFA, right? And it's the summer, and I think they've said the Jets are like, we have to fix this D. It's like, if anyone's going to be like, yo, dude, here's like 5 years at $5 million, it's going to be the Jets. So yeah, I don't think we're landing Oleksiak anyways. But I would agree with you, what you said to start, is like, I do think they need maybe something back there, possibly. But then even if they're doing that, you got to find some takers for some of these other guys, like Dunn and stuff, because there's just too many people back there.
Speaking of which, Elliot Friedman did wax poetic about the potential for a Dunn trade.
I mean, he seems to think it's like a foregone conclusion. Yeah,
it is. I'm pretty sure. Listen, you can't let him get taken for nothing. I know Jeremy Rutherford made the argument of like, what if you trade Dunn and then Nico Mikko gets taken for nothing? Then okay. Fine. Yeah. Dunn is valued highly enough.
Yeah.
Around this league, that I still think you have to trade him. I'll say, we're doing a fun project at the Hockey Writers. I don't think this is a state secret. If it is, this podcast will be deleted and I'll be killed. But we're all taking a team as like a mock expansion draft. We're all representing a team as a general manager, and we're trying to make the decisions that we would make for our team. I took the Blues, obviously. And I knew I was trading Dunn, because I have to, because I can't let him be, I can't protect him. And we'll talk about some people's ideas of a protection list probably in a minute, but I can't protect him, because I've got to protect Falk, Krug, and Parayko. And I'm not doing 4x4, because then I'd leave some way too valuable forward exposed. You got to get what you can for him. And I had multiple GMs come and offer me things for Petrangelo, for Dunn. And I ultimately got a first-round pick. Now, admittedly, it could be the last first-round pick. But, you know, I don't know if that's a realistic offer because I'm not with real NHL GMs, but it does show you that this is a guy who, despite the fact that he hasn't been utilized very well, that he's still very valued by other teams. Mm-hmm. And I think that's something we got to keep in mind. What do you think about trading Dunn, and what would you hope to get as a return?
I mean, I would want either something comparable, I think, for a forward, like a left wing, maybe a young mm-hmm. left wing that's great analytically.
You turned down Adam Ehrn.
Yeah, I don't want him. I don't want that guy. Or maybe I do. We'll see later. Yeah, I think you either need a comparable young forward, or I'm not really interested in getting like another D back mm-hmm. for him. Or, yeah, like you said, or it's going to be a pick.
I'd accept, like, a young right-handed D who could be, like, a prospect and a pick.
Yeah, yeah.
But I wouldn't take I don't want, a league-ready RD.
I feel like...
Unless we're making other big moves, which I'm a fan of.
I feel like we'd get a first form, and then you'd get, like, a really, like, fifth-roundy prospect sort of thing.
Yeah.
Or it's going to go the opposite direction, where you get, like, oh, this is, like, our... third best prospect, but also here's a fifth round pick.
I think that's right. And I kind of lean the second way.
Yeah.
I'd love to get like another trademark prospect.
Yeah.
Because that you already know, and the pick you don't know who's going to fall to you.
I think he's worth it. I think that's the difference, right? Is like it's not that, obviously he's not playing like amazing here, but it's not like he's dog shit here and people are like, well, we gotta get rid of him.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, well, apparently this team doesn't feel like they need to use him or want him, and other teams definitely still do want him, so you can actually get a fair amount of value for him. It's kind of, other than keeping him here and utilizing him as a player the way he should be, it is kind of the best case scenario for the Blues when it comes to a trade, because he's not in the dumpster.
Yeah.
He's not a Vladimir Tarasenko type who has no trade value. Do you ever think you could say about Vladimir Tarasenko? He has no trade value. Like, none. That zero. Sucks. Zilch.
I don't like that. I don't want to trade him, though. So
no, yeah, yeah.
I'm not with those people. It's so...
not one of those.
It is weird to me that there are people in this fan base who don't want to rebuild, but do want to let go of guys like Shin, Krug, Tarasenko. You know, like, we need those guys to be critical players if we're going to have any chance of success. Ian's reading something very compelling, but...
I'm reading responses to my Athletic post.
Well, we should talk about that. But you know what I'm saying? Like, and this is actually a segue into that, if you want it to be. You can't... You've made your bed with Shin and Krug and Tarasenko, you know? If Tarasenko's terrible for two more years, then he can walk, and that's fine. But the best case scenario for the only chance the Blues have of being relevant again soon is if those guys have better seasons, much better seasons, you know? And so you can't trade them for peanuts just to get rid of their cap hit and then say, well, we're rebuilding and we're contending now. And it's like, no, yeah. Man, you can trade them if you want to retool, rebuild, but you can't trade those guys and also be better next year. So do you want to tell people about your comment?
Yeah, no, it's just the fact that, yeah, that people basically say, well, I looked at cap friendly, right, for the expansion draft, and I said, well, let's get rid of some of the contracts that have, like, a lot on the books for a long time. So basically, Krug or Shen or even Falk, and they're like, we'll just expose those guys because I like Barbashev and I like Dunn, and we'll protect them. And then maybe Seattle will poach one of those players off our team. Because they need to hit the cap floor, right? They need those contracts.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm always like, man, okay. So the thing is,
I'm pretty sure they'd rather hit the cap floor with like Robin Lehner.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. There's other contracts out there for players that are like too, quote unquote, too much money that they probably still prefer over the guys we have available.
Mm-hmm.
So you put, let's say, Krug out there, and you hope they take Krug. Because you protected Dunn, and let's say you put Shen out there and instead you protect Barbashev, right?
Mm-hmm.
They can still select
Sundqvist,
Samford, like whoever,
Mikula.
Yeah, they could grab any of these dudes, and then Shen and Krug, who are here for the next 6 years, get to look you like Armstrong in the face and be like, hey, dude, what the fuck was that? And I get it. Well, I already had a response here that was like, hey, we did that to Perron and he came back. You know, they understand the business. Perron was not a part of this core when we signed him for a, whatever that was, a 2-year deal.
Mm-hmm.
And he knew that. That's the difference. The difference is if you think these guys know it's a business, then they also understand at the same time when they are and are not part of the core of a team, when they're a freelance guy. And when we signed Perron the second time, he was a freelance dude. And we exposed him again. And these guys, again, are probably not dumb. He's like, hey, you signed me a 2-year contract at an affordable dollar amount, and there's an expansion draft coming up. You probably understand when you talk to your agent that you're going to be, hey, you might be expansion bait. And they're okay with that. So if they understand that, because they're all humans and they can figure this shit out, then they're probably a little pissed when they signed a 7-year deal with you, and after 1 year, you said, no thanks, mm-hmm. we put you out there. Now I get it. You can then say, oh, it's just part of the business. That's just how it goes, you know?
You totally cannot say that.
That's what I mean. No. What is it? If I'm Tory Krug and you, it's part of the business. It'd be like, part of the business. You don't want me? I'm asking you to your face. You don't want me.
Yeah.
And is your literal responsibility, it's part of the business. And you will physically turn your back and walk away from him. Like, what? Maybe I'm thinking too much about this, but I just think it's crazy to me when you think about it. In reality, you cannot expose some of these guys just on the basis that their contract's too long. Like, I get it. I understand from a fantasy league sort of scenario. Yeah, man, if this is... you and me or whoever doing this, the Hockey Writers, yeah, dude, for sure. But in a world where people live and have livelihoods, they can't do that. There's a reason that every protected list you'll see from anyone worth their while that writes for the Blues has Shen protected, has Krug protected, has like all these different guys protected. They're like, well, their contract's kind of long. Why would we protect them? It's like, because Seattle's not going to take them. Why would Seattle take Krug? So they can have that contract for the next 7 years?
Yeah.
Well, we could trade them. I hate that too. Well, they could trade them, you know? Like, if we give them to Seattle, Seattle doesn't have to keep them for that long. They could trade them. Do you understand?
Why can't we then?
I always wonder, like, yeah, there's lots of ifs and buts, man, but if you can't trade him, he's there forever. You don't sign a contract with someone or pick someone on an expansion draft. I'm like, well, you know what? I guess we could just, they might just eventually be able to move him, and that's what we're going to base this pick on.
It's just...
I don't know. It's just crazy to me because I'm like, look, there's a set standard, right? It's pretty much there's... who do we have, right? We can name it off to our heads. Tarasenko, Shen, O'Reilly, Perron, Thomas, Kyrou, and I think the other one that always tends to be Sundqvist at forward. Mm-hmm. And then obviously Parayko, Krug, and Falk. Mm-hmm. And then Binnington. That seems to be the set standard. And I get people are trying to play fun with it, but some people are like really pissed online. We're like, dude, why wouldn't we just expose Krug? And it's like, I don't know, because that's not how it's going to work. It can't be that way. Truly's wearing off, and the anger's coming out. I've drank too much water.
Again, I can't. We are both as an answer, an advance answer to one of the mailbag questions that's coming. We are both. I don't want to call it a rebuild, but we're certainly on the side of, hey, we're not good enough right now. You look at that Avs night series. We couldn't hang with either of those teams. We didn't hang with one of those teams, you know? We're not good enough right now to be competitive at the highest levels of hockey. And to me, I've said this before, but the cup changed the equation for me.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care about second round exits anymore. It just doesn't matter to me. I want to be building towards winning more championships. I don't want a false hope of maybe this is the season we can make the conference finals again. Woo!
Right. It does feel like if that's where you get bounced out, that's where you get bounced out. But you're not aiming for the stars. You're aiming for the moon. You're aiming for like the thing. And if wherever you fall, that's where you fall. But you're not going, hey, man, if we get the second round, no skin off my back. I love it. And it's like, no, that's not it anymore.
Yeah. And that's like, there were some people that took umbrage with when Berube said, well, the goal is to make the playoffs. And we did that tonight, even though we got drubbed in that game. And like, I kind of agreed with him because like, first of all, you want to play good in every game. But secondly, like the goal should always be the Stanley Cup. And yeah, everyone knows that's not always or even often going to happen.
Yeah.
But if that's not your goal, then you need to be rebuilding. You know, like, to me, that's just where it is. If you're a team where you're like, I can't fathom winning the Stanley Cup this year, then you better be building for the future.
Yeah.
Because otherwise you're, I don't even know who you are, because I used to say the Wild, and I can't say them anymore. So otherwise you're somebody right there in the middle, you know? And so, yeah, people can talk about, like, and that's to my point, and I already said this once, but, like, you talk about exposing Krug or Shin or Tarasenko, but even if you think that's going to work, let's say you really believe that if you expose Krug and he leaves and Seattle takes him, now you've got a gaping hole on your left side. How are you going to be better? So if you think, like, that's your best option, then you better have a second step of that plan where you tell me what you're going to put on the left side. Because, listen, I love Vince Dunn, but Craig Berube's not going to put him on the first pairing. We've already seen proof of that for years. And Scotty Perunovic isn't just going to step from shoulder injury to top pairing minutes. Mm-hmm. Marco Scandella was god-awful this year. So what are you going to do? Who are you going to put there? Mm. Nobody. You ain't got nothing.
That is a really good point. It's like, you protect Dunn for what?
Yeah.
For to have him not be used again?
Krug didn't have that bad a season, first of all. Especially considering that he wasn't used that well. Mm. And secondly, he's a guy we need to be good now. We need a guy like Torrey Krug. Mm. I love Vince Dunn, but the best Vince Dunn could ever be is a pretty good Torrey Krug.
That is the thing. You get rid of Krug and it's like, look, I don't think he's great or I don't think he's amazing on this team, but it's a hole. It's another hole, and you're shifting people up into a position where it's like, do you think Torrey Krug got too many minutes this year and was exposed?
Uh-huh.
Vince Dunn with all those minutes and be that much better? Probably not.
Also, I'm not happy about it, but Braden Shin has had one not great season with this team. Mm. And the rest of them were phenomenal. I know it's always worrying when it's the first full season of a new contract. And yeah. I would rather have not signed him to 8 years either. I think that was insane. We both talked about it at the time. But, like, you're telling me you're that freaked by one bad year? Everybody has bad years. I'm not that guy, I don't think, who's like, well, one off season destroys you. And by the way, he still had 36 points in 56 games. It wasn't that terrible, you know? It just seems to me like that is so obviously a bad idea that it's not worth spending the 10 minutes we already did spend on it.
We need to be angry about something.
Oh, we're going to be angry about plenty. You want to do this look around the league before we dive into the mailbag?
Yeah, the league's small now.
Let's do it. Montreal sweeps Winnipeg. Wow.
Of course. We all knew it.
But only because Mark Scheifele wasn't in there. Totally different series if he's there. I honestly don't think the Avs can beat the Golden Knights, but I so want them to.
Well, they lost.
The Habs, sorry.
Oh, Habs. Oh, I said the Avs.
No, I did say the Avs for sure, but I meant the Habs. No, you were right. I was right.
I was like, you can want them to all you want next year. I think Montreal has no way of beating the Golden Knights, but also, God, that'd be dope if they could.
And then they just, I really...
I mean, Carey Price, a good goalie.
I still need them to get railroaded by Tampa, though. Like, I don't want Tampa to win, but I want Canada to get that far and hope that much and then still be crushed. They lit up the CN Tower for a team that eliminated them.
I know, I tweeted
that. That country is broken. Your analogy was so good.
Oh, yeah, it's like if you put light up the arch red because Chicago is the only U.S. team left, and it's like, hey, we're just pulling for you guys. Like, what the fuck? You for real?
Yeah.
I get a smaller country with less teams in their national sport, but sorry, I'm not doing that. Man, I don't know. Carey Price,
I do like.
Carey Price could steal it.
I don't want Vegas really to win the cup, but like, part of me thinks the most fun would be if Canada is just destroyed
what's,
the moment.
What's
they
your
face
rank?
An American team.
What's your rank choices here for winning the cup?
Islanders, 50 feet of air. I struggle on the Habs because if it was just the Habs, if it was just that team, they'd be number one by a long way. Mm-hmm. But because they're Canada's habitats, then it's like I kind of want to put them fourth because screw Canada.
I think the winner coming out of the Western, I don't know what you call this, the side, the Habs, Golden Knights won. I'm fine with either team winning because if Montreal does it, that's like, wow, that's freaking nuts. If Golden Knights do it, then like we've talked about before, it just invalidates everything about the Northern Division.
My biggest concern with it being the Habs is only that like, if Canada's going to win the Cup, I want them to do it legit. I don't want them to have a whole season where they're sheltered. And I know the other narrative feels truer, and it probably will be. I think they'll probably get destroyed because they were sheltered all season. But if they do win this year, there will always be that question of like, what if they just played in the Atlantic all year, though, you know, or whatever. And I'd like to know for real that Canada earned it. But yeah. I think in reality, it's Islanders, Habs, Lightning, Knights. I've really soured on the Knights.
Really?
I don't know why. I just don't like Mark Stone. I don't like their owner constantly tinkering. I don't like Pete DeBoer. That's well established on this podcast. They're fun, though. I mean, they're so good. It's hard to really hate them.
I think I would go Islanders, Canadians,
Golden Knights.
Golden Knights, Lightning. Because as has been established on this podcast as well, I don't like the Lightning for whatever reason. Mm-hmm. I don't like them. I also don't like that they're $18 million over the cap. And that's okay. I don't hate the Lightning for that reason.
Mm-hmm.
This is the alternate version of hate the player, not the game. I hate the game, not the player. The NHL should fucking change that shit. Because I forget who tweeted it today, and I saw it. They're two superstars over the cap.
Yeah.
I think Dougie Hamilton had some comment where he's like, yeah, it just seems kind of odd or whatever. I wonder what we could do with like two extra players on our team that are making $9 million a piece. And it's like, yeah, when you think about it that way, that's kind of fucked.
The number of people who say, well, they were just gaming the system. That's on the NHL. Like, you can't be mad at the Lightning. No, they gamed the system by lying about injuries. You can't tell me Nikita Kucherov was actually severely injured right until the end of the season and then came out in game one and had like 3 points.
And it's great now,
You know, like
he's just an elite athlete.
He should have like pretended a little harder than that. It's total bullshit, to quote The Good Place. So, yeah. New York bounced Boston in 6 games. They look dangerous. I actually think they're the scariest team, although they do have the least chances of winning the Cups, even less than the Habs from Money Puck.
Oh, really?
But they feel dangerous to me. They feel like they got something magic going on there.
I feel like they match up well against the Lightning. I mean, last year, the same matchup happened in the Eastern Conference Finals, and they at least went to 6 games.
Mm-hmm.
I could see this definitely going 7, or possibly just completely in the Islanders' favor. I don't know. Yeah, they seem to really shut teams down. I mean, Pittsburgh was the better team in their series,
mm-hmm.
and the Islanders won. And then Boston, I mean, they had a lot of back and forth games, but I thought the Islanders handled them really well. So, I don't know.
Yeah.
To me, it feels like these series could go either way. Mm-hmm. I guess the Golden Knights Habs won. Feels like it's just going to be a railroading of the Habs, but like also I thought the Jets would beat the shit out of them. I also thought Toronto would beat the hell out of them, so I don't know. It seems fun, even though it's three of the same teams that were there last year.
As you said, if like Mark Stone gets grievously injured in game one, we know how that series is going to go.
Habs and four.
Yeah, for sure. We've got a lot of mailbag questions. It is currently 11:30, so I don't know if we'll get through all these, but we'll do our darndest. Our friend Jackie Chan Effect.
Jackie_Chan_Effect.
You're right. Excuse me. Forgive me for forgetting our age-old tradition. Jackie_Chan_Effect writes in on Reddit, "What are some of your takes that you regret? I like that you both wear your hearts on your sleeve, but I imagine there are takes you wish you hadn't made. I love listening to your old episodes from the year we won the cup and remembering what a roller coaster that season was. Also love episodes where you trash the Senators and Melnick for their dysfunctional organization. But now that they kind of had their shit together, I need you two to find another franchise to lampoon, because that is where you guys are at your best." Sabres.
Yeah, I'll tell you what. Buffalo's going to fuck up the Eichel trade so hard.
Oh, God. They really are. It's going to be so sad. It's not going to be sad because we're going to get him. And somehow we're not going to give up Robert Thomas. And you're just going to be like, what?
Yeah.
It's going to be like Nikita Alexandrov, a first-round pick, Vince Dunn. And, like,
that's it.
Marco Scandella goes back to Buffalo to offset the cap.
In any Buffalo trade that the Blues commit, there has to be at least one player where I'm like, you're taking him as well? Because that's what the Sobotka yeah. was. And I guess, like
Bergwijn to offset cap hit, I get. But both of them?
Sobotka in the O'Reilly trade, and then Stewart in the Miller trade. Both of those, I was like, you're also going to take them? All right.
Okie doke.
No takesies, backsies.
You remember back then when cap hits like Stewart's that were like 2.65 were like devastating. Get this dude off of continue. This is a really fascinating question, and I kind of want to chew on it even more because I've thought about it since last night. I don't have a ton of that just jump out at me as like...
Steven's impeccable with this takes.
I'm pretty darn good. When I recorded the hand pass episode on my own, well, Justin tried and the technology broke, and my soul was shattered on that day. And I remember just thinking, like, I can't blame them if they fold. Mm-hmm. They could give up, and I can't even be mad at this point. The league hates them. The universe is against them. And that was wrong. So I'm going to sneeze. Except I can't.
He's allergic. He's allergic to his own bad takes.
I mean, I'm sure there are some howlers out there that I just don't remember, you know?
Jackie Chan effect, you're going to tell us what our worst
takes were. Yeah, you have one in mind. You want to
skewer us. I was going to say, I think I remember one specifically where we were doing really poorly in 2018 and just being like, this team is going to rebuild before it ever wins a cup. There's no chance this team wins a cup. They're so bad. They just got O'Reilly and they still sucked. And I was like, there's no way. You have to start over completely. I thought that was like an Armstrong. I thought that was going to be the end of the Armstrong. Cause I was like, this is a trade that should have worked. That didn't work. And that feels like a nail in the coffin. They go, look, he tried his best and it still didn't launch his team in the stratosphere. Especially when after all those moves, we were like already being heralded as like, oh, this is definitely a strong cup team. And for the first 3 months, we were dog shit. I just want to be like, it's over.
Yeah,
it's
over. If you go back to our winning episode, not the one in the car, but the one after that, not that anyone should ever go back and listen to our old episodes. And apparently some of you do, and you're insane. But there is that long montage at the beginning of it that has a lot of our, like, this team's so bad. They're so terrible. We lost to Winnipeg, like, 8-2 in the first game of that season. I think a couple other ones, like, I really wanted Mike Yeo to take over when it was time. I thought that was, like, great.
I think we all convinced ourselves of that.
Hot dog. Or no, that wasn't... Yeah, that was the other one, wasn't it? I really wanted Craig Berube to take over when it was time. I think the biggest one probably, and I know it's recent, but, like, we left wiggle room for the Pietrangelo deal to not be a bad decision. Mm-hmm. Even as recently as a couple months ago, weeks ago, on a THW podcast I did. I don't know how you can be better without him than you would have been with him.
Right.
There
is a weird flow to keeping Pietrangelo here and having him be middling at best in the last half of that contract that like fits where I thought this team was going to be going at that point that I get other people wouldn't think or understand because we're all individuals. But in my head, I was like, yeah, when people were like, yeah, he's going to suck at the end of that contract, I'm like, yeah, that's okay. Mm-hmm. We'll all suck.
Yeah.
That's kind of what I think. We got to keep this little window open for a while because after, when Alex Petrangelo sucks, the team sucks.
We all
and then we'll
suck.
just kind of start over then. That'll be the natural progression. And instead, we're like, no. Mm-hmm. And so we didn't sign him. And it was like, whoa. And it threw the whole, like, my brain off, and I'm like, so what are we doing now? Like, we're going for it still. I'm like, no, we can't, because you just got rid of them. And it's still so weird. It's the weird thing where it's like, no, you can't have a full no movement clause. I think we had a great conversation about that, because it was like, I kind of get why Armstrong didn't give him a no move clause, because, like, then, you know, other people will be like, I want a move clause too. But you said very aptly, you can just tell them they're not Alex Petrangelo. And it's like, yeah, you're right. Like, yeah, dude, we gave the captain who helped us win the cup a no move clause. And you're Tyler Bozak. So no. Bye. And that's it.
Yeah, I mean, that has sunk with me more and more over time. And also, additionally, and finally, I'm sure there are rotten takes on
all of the
Prospect Pyramid episodes.
Oh, that's what Prospect Pyramid's about, purpose, baby.
Yeah. Bennington, obviously, all the jokes were made about him. But I also remember, I think, weren't we higher on Alexei Toropchenko on one than on Quim Costin?
Sure. I thought Alexei Toropchenko would be great.
Some rough ones there.
I remember me specifically saying that at one point I was 50-50 on whether or not Tavares was going to be on the Blues. I was like, yeah, I don't know. I was like, flip a coin. I think he could be here because Petrangelo is a good friend, and I don't know.
Yeah, that was that wasn't happening.
Yeah.
But we were both on that bandwagon.
We look forward to making more egregious takes in the future.
Yes. GK101991, which I have a sneaking suspicion is our friend Traverse City correspondent Garrett, but I don't know that for sure, but I'm fairly sure I do. Do you guys want to rebuild, and if so, how? You could go the Rangers route, Red Wings route, or even the Sens route. I personally want it to happen. The Blues have had 2 top 10 draft picks in my lifetime, and your guys too. Also, he knows our lifetimes, which
like
are real
that.
So more. So, with EJ at number 1 in 06 and Petro at number 4 in 08, I wish the talk of top prospects actually applied to the Blues for once, and I could get excited about the youth coming into the organization. Ian, I answered the last one first. You take a swing at this one.
His take
will be wrong, and then I'll give you the right opinion.
I do agree that I wish we were able to talk about the Blues pipeline, like, with confidence and in like the top 10 or something. And it was for a snippet there with Thomas and Kyrou in the pipeline, but now with them gone, it's pretty bleak. It's pretty thin. And we've never had anyone where it's like, hey, this is like a top 5 dude coming into the league, baby, sort of thing.
We could have drafted David Pastrnak.
Yeah. And it's like, that'd be so nice. I think I wrote a little bit on this. I think a rebuild won't happen until this team is healthy, thinks it's good, and misses the playoffs.
Mm-hmm. That is a perfect description.
In which case, they will then say, okay, maybe we gotta tinker or whatever. But if this missing the playoffs period is also, say, 2 years from now, and O'Reilly's up, and Tarasenko's up, and Preko was just up the year before, like, you have all these contracts converging at once, you are now at the you're at the crossroads where you go, we are not good anymore, our contracts are up, do we try and sign them back, do we try and go to free agency and get some guys and reinvigorate this team and just push one more time, or do we do the Rangers and pull the chute and just say, fuck it, we're here now, this is perfect. I think those two things have to happen for them to fully commit to a rebuild, because I'm a little worried that Armstrong's always going to be like, we're always competitive. Come on, guys. But I also think I don't know how Armstrong thinks, but sometimes I think it might be where he thinks his career is at. Mm-hmm. Or if he thinks he's going to be here for a while, he's like, you know what? Let's do a rebuild. I could do that. But if he thinks like, yo, I've talked with Stillman, and I know I'm not going to be here for them in 2 or 3 years or whatever. He's like, no, we're going to keep pushing because I don't want to all of a sudden I'm not going to like be part of a rebuild, and they know that, and they're going to fire my ass. So I think some of it comes down to how he feels too, but I'm sure he's a professional and I'm sure he still thinks about team first whatnot. So
well, his legacy is with the Blues now regardless.
So. Yeah, right. So I think I just don't foresee us going for a full rebuild until everyone's healthy and basically the opposite of this season, and it's still like, nope, you didn't make it. Or you get to the first round with a fully healthy team and you get swept again, right? Mm-hmm. Maybe if they get swept again next year in the first round, I can see that being a really big, like, I don't think so, boys.
Yeah. I think to answer this question, he says the Rangers way, the Red Wings way, or the Sens way. I certainly don't want the Red Wings way. And I think that's the one we're on track for.
Right.
Is that sort of like slow, kind of what you described, like slowly realizing, oh boy, we're not good.
It's the moving target until you're in the basement, yeah. Right? It's the, we just need to make the playoffs, guys. Hey, we just need to be competitive, guys. Yeah. Hey, oh, we just need to get a top 10 pick.
Yeah.
And then you're like, oh, we're adrift.
And like, I don't think we have some contracts we maybe don't love, but I don't think we have any like Justin Abdelkaders for 5.5 million sort of contracts. But like, I do think, I mean, I'm always more interested by prospects than I am by mediocrity.
Yeah, right.
Number one's always like top tier competitor, exciting team currently. That's what you always want. But like, if it's going to be a choice between fringe making the playoffs, missing the playoffs, mm-hmm. second round is probably like your highest aspiration. I'm always going to prefer a rebuild or a real retool. And I do think we're in a position where it doesn't really have to be a total overhaul.
Well, I mean, it could definitely be a Rangers-type situation, yeah, right? Yeah,
and not even to that extent, because even the Rangers still had to come out and say, yo, it's going to be a lean couple of years.
Yeah. Well, I just mean the sense that they said that, but they turned it around
pretty
quick.
But they turned it around so quick. I don't think that would be that hard. And I think Armstrong can do it. I don't know about our scouting after Bill Armstrong left. But I do think, 16th overall pick this year, you get one more draft pick. It's not considered a deep draft, which is like obviously a bad thing. But that also, to me, is like when it's more likely that there's like some guy at 28th overall that you like snag.
Who
turns out to be a star, because it's just the especially this year with the COVID scouting situation too, like, just seems a ton more likely that sort of happens. But certainly I think that's kind of ties everything together with Alexiak and all this stuff. I do think you have to be so intentional about your direction right now. I think this team has made a lot of moves in the last couple of years that were kind of done in a vacuum. And it's like, sure, we can trade for Falk and extend him, because what if Pietrangelo leaves? And like, Falk was great this season, so I'm not crapping on Falk, but like, I would 100% rather have Pietrangelo with a no movement clause and no Falk, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I think everybody agrees on that. And it's like, sure, we'll sign Krug because Pietrangelo left, and that's scary. And it's like, okay, but Torrey Krug's not the player Alex Pietrangelo is, and your coach isn't a Torrey Krug type of coach.
It does kind of feel like the ship's springing leaks and you're just shoving little corks
in. The shin extension was like one of those Armstrong things, and I don't even think it's a really bad number. I don't think it's going to be terrible for this team necessarily, but it's one of those things where it's like, we do this right now. And it's like, why'd you do it right now, though? And like, again, as we've said many times, like, if you're keeping the core together, keep Pietrangelo. And if you're not, then don't. You know, like, and so all of those things to me, I still think for the most part, whatever structure you have here can be made into maybe not a Stanley Cup team, I don't know, but like a really good team, a competitive team. But you have to be so, so careful. And I do think that the other side of that cliff is the Detroit rebuild.
Mm-hmm.
And so with that in mind, I think the safer route is to try and think future first. Mm-hmm. I think the more doable, more palatable route is to think future first. But I don't know that that's the way Armstrong's going to go. And I don't think it has to be if he knows what he's doing. Yeah. But it has to be a move. It can't be, I want to sign Alexiak because he's here. It has to be, I want to find the players that are right for this team and get the return and build, you know, younger, faster, whatever I want to do. I need to get the coach that supports my playing style, all of those things.
Yeah, it just needs to be reframed a bit.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. So thanks for that question.
Thanks, Garrett.
Trophy Pants asked us about 11 billion questions.
We said one question.
Yeah, come on. Your favorite. Send us a 3x5 postage stamp envelope.
With money, please.
Well, if you send us money, we'll answer all the questions. Yeah. But if you just send us your favorite question,
we'll do almost anything for money.
That's right. No, the money floor has not been found. he asks, who's a penalty-killing specialist at forward you could see us acquiring to fill the void from Steam's retirement? Oh, that's another thing I wanted to say in my long-winded rant about rebuilding. Everybody talks about, like, Steen left and Bomeister left, and we were just caught off guard. And it's like, but why?
I'm like, no
You didn't
way.
Think either of those guys had, like, long Blues careers coming,
that's
right?
That's what I mean. Bomeister was playing for another year, maybe.
Probably maybe. One more.
Yeah.
Steen, same. Maybe
yeah,
one more
just
year.
Just because he had the contract. It's like, yeah, that's it. You didn't. It jumped ahead by a year, and I can get that. They can screw up your plans a little bit, but it couldn't have been like, well, we thought these guys were just going to be solid core pieces of our team moving forward. It's like, no, man.
Yeah, but losing Bomeister doesn't justify signing Krug and Scandella on your left side. You know?
That's what I mean. You got Scandella to fill in for Bomeister, but then you got Falk and Krug because because Petrangelo left. One because he might leave, and one because he did leave, and it just. Yeah, I think the more you talk about it, the more it just felt like, this kind of feels like a patchwork team because we're just like, gotta fill that, gotta fill that.
Yep.
But anyways, Philip Deneau.
I like that.
I like Philip Deneau. Does he play PK? I think he does.
I think
he's
so.
A two-way center.
I like, I've said this before, but I still like Mikael Granlund as a piece. I think that is a guy that can complement your bottom six, middle six, whatever you want to call it.
My bottom anytime.
Anytime, baby. Along those lines, what's the most boring trade you could see us make this offseason?
I said Dunford to know. But really, I think it's going to be Samford for someone equally as boring.
Yeah, it's just going to be like a little pick shuffle. Or not pick shuffle, but like roster spot
here's
shuffle.
Here's another mid-20s
here's William
guy
Carrier
boring.
For Zach Samford. Okay. It's like, we got him back. Yeah.
We got him back. Coming home.
We will play it for sure. Could y'all examine the consequences of sinking the team next season for high draft picks? Like, what does the roster look like in 22, and can we hold on to the remaining cup core we do want after a rebuild year? I mean, we just talked about rebuilding a lot.
If you rebuild, I don't think you're not going to have much of that core, right? Like, you want... Like, ideally, if he wanted to be here, I'd be like, Ryan O'Reilly, you're here to coach these young guys and be the captain. But I don't know in 2 years when his contract's up, he's going to want that. So
yeah, and like I would love to have a very high pick in next year's draft because it's a very good draft. But like, I don't know how you effectively tank that. I don't think we're bad enough right now to be like, all right, next year we're just going to really suck and then we're going to be good again. Like, you'd have to lose so many assets. Apart from just telling the guys who are here, like, hey, lose. But I don't think that's going to happen. I mean, if tanking to get some good picks in next year's draft, that's possible. Tanking to actually try and get a top three pick, that seems a lot less likely. Which depth player, Barbie, Sanford, etc., is most expendable? What do you expect we could get for them? Samford has done some good penalty killing work. He showed some versatility. I think my problem with Samford is he's one of those guys that the fan base has given up on.
Yeah.
Which is always a problem a little bit, partially just because I'm tired of hearing about it.
My computer died.
Oh, I'm sorry. But also because...
Oh, and that's it.
And we put him to sleep. But also because, you know, he's a guy that people thought was going to be a higher up the lineup kind of impact guy.
Yeah.
And now if he's just a bottom six guy, that kind of sucks. I think the depth guy we can that's most expendable is probably Sammy Boy, number one. Yeah. He hits.
People love hitting.
Yeah. But, you know, that's kind of how I feel for Sanford.
I feel like if you're gonna keep this core and you're not trading Chen or Riley and all these guys, you're gonna kind of a lot like the Toronto Maple Leafs, this Blues team. But you're going to have to shuffle around the outside, right? Like, you're going to have to shuffle a Sanford or a Blay or somebody around. Because, like, you just can't. If it's not working over and over again and you know the guys you like, then you're going to switch out the guys that are expendable, and that's those guys. Sanford for what's-his-face? Earn? Is it just Earn? It's not Ernie?
No.
Oh, I like it even less.
Yeah.
Yeah, in Detroit. You trade Sanford to Detroit, you get Earn back, and he had 11 goals.
Bingo,
bango. Tied for most on Red Wings this year. That's insanity.
What does a Parayko trade look like, he asks.
Inevitable.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of layers there. If he signs an extension, you get a huge return.
Yeah.
If he doesn't, I think you probably, you're looking at something like Seth Jones, where each guy's a UFA.
Yeah.
Or maybe you get a guy with 2 years or something, but like, well, maybe you can get a pick and a prospect still for 1 year, but like, it really depends on whether he's willing to sign an extension.
Yeah.
But think back to Shattenkirk. We could have gotten Taylor Hall for Shattenkirk if he'd signed an extension. So it's possible.
That's crazy to think back then. It was like, we missed out on Taylor Hall. Yeah. And now I'm like, oh, that's okay. Because Taylor Hall's kind of what it is.
Yeah. I also, you know, it's not like other NHL teams don't know he was injured and had kind of a crappy season. You know, so like,
yeah,
you're probably not trading him at most value.
I mean, that's the thing, is like, if this team sucks again this year, I think you get a lot of interesting looks between, like, like you said, next summer, you can't let him walk,
mm-hmm.
so you gotta sign a trade or something, or trade him at the deadline if we suck that bad, but I can't see that happening. Yeah. I don't know what it looks like. I would love to see a Parayko trade. I'd love to see what other teams would offer us.
Yeah.
Float that around tomorrow on your hockey writers Slack.
I wouldn't. I can do that. I can ask. Where does Hoffman go if not here? I think Detroit or Montreal.
Oh, yeah.
I weirdly feel like they're still, I know they've had the season, but they're still a team that needs goal scoring.
Yeah.
And they can probably play a defensive style that covers for him a little better.
Yeah.
So he could be a fit out there.
I definitely think he's going back east.
Yeah.
He tried one West team. He said, fuck it. And he left. He tried San Jose.
Shark for 3 minutes.
He tried, and then he was gone.
It's not going to work, guys. I'm out of here.
I think he's going to go to the Rangers. I feel like the Rangers would do that wacky tabacky.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Will the NHL get an enforcer to box Logan Paul at the All-Star game? If so, who? Obviously, we all want Reeves.
Yeah.
I think it would be Reeves or Evander Kane. One of those two, probably.
Sure. Bring Tony Twist out of retirement. I just want Logan Paul to go away.
Yeah.
Can he beat someone at boxing completely? And I can be like, yeah, that's right. You're right, Logan. You're the best boxer ever.
He beat those last couple of people. What I don't get is, like, listen, it's fun for entertainment,
yeah,
but they're so obviously staged.
Oh, yeah.
And people are making millions off of suckers. I mean, I watch pro wrestling all the time, so I can't really judge, but like,
staged when you see it.
Trophy Pants also, yeah, exactly, I am an expert. Trophy Pants also snuck in with a question after the Avs defeat and said, now that the Avs and Edmonton have lost, do you still believe we need superstar power, or continue with a score-by-committee framework? Here's the thing. If we want to do a score-by-committee framework, we need to be a lot better at it.
I know. That's the thing. When people are like, I like the score-by-committee, I'm like, we need a better committee.
It's like the Islanders. Like, yeah, they're doing score-by-committee, and they're fine, but they are much better than us. That's, and they also have Matthew Barzal.
That's the thing. Is like, yeah, Matt Barzal's not any of those
he's
guys
not
on those
Connor
teams,
McDavid,
but
he's
still
pretty
better than anybody
good
we have.
Yeah.
Like, he's definitely like the one, just the slight tier below those guys, and that makes all the difference. But yeah, scoring by committee works, but again, your committee includes Zach Sanford and Sammy Blay and Jaden Schwartz, who didn't score for jack shit this year,
uh-huh,
and Braden Chen, who he said might have an off season, blah blah, but you have David Perron and Ryan O'Reilly, yeah, who are like, your committee currently.
And Jordan Kyrie.
You have a committee of three last season. I get there could be better, or like we're probably better off this season. Like some of those guys are just having really bad droughts. But still, it is one of those things where I don't mind scoring by committee, but they got to do it then.
Yeah.
And it seems to work. I mean, and that's a whole nother, like, we can talk about that, I think, maybe next time, too. But, like, it does kind of bring up the bigger question of, like, hey, is a solidly built team, four great lines, you know, three great pairings, blah, blah, just better in the playoffs, better built for the playoffs than a team where it's like, yo, we've got Connor McDavid on this line and Leon Draisaitl and no one.
I think for sure in the current playoff format where no penalties are called.
Yeah, that's the thing is like, I don't mind. I understand why people are up in arms with the whole, like, they don't call the playoffs or they don't call the regular season the same way they call the playoffs, which is why the Stars are trying to market during the regular season and in the sport don't thrive in the playoffs because now they're being clutched and grabbed and all this junk and it's not letting them play their game and therefore the playoffs suck. I get that take, but I also think, like, obviously Stars win, like Sidney Crosby's won, Alex Ovechkin's won. It just forces you to, I don't know, it just forces you to think differently. You have to build a better team. You have to build a team. I mean, seriously, if there's no way the Edmonton Oilers, even with Connor McDavid on that team, there's no way that team is going to win the cup. Like, if Connor McDavid willed that team all the way to win the cup and they won the cup, and it was like, yeah, because he had 50 points in the postseason, and then Draisaitl had 35, and no one else scored, like, that'd be amazing, but that would also be like, just give him the cup for every year for the next 10 years. That's a freak. Like, that's a certified freak of nature, yeah. If that were to happen. There's no one other than, not even Wayne Gretzky, because Wayne Gretzky had a whole team around him, right? Like, you have to have a team. You can't just be even the best player in the league. You can't just be that player and then some other dudes.
Yeah.
It'll never work.
What's the stat? I think no player making $11 million has made, like, the second round or third round yet.
Until
Price. But he doesn't make 11, so it must be 10.
Like 10. Yeah, I think.
He's 10.5.
Yeah. It's like, and that's fine.
But, like, goalie kind of makes, as much as you don't want to pay a goalie that much, it kind of makes the most sense.
Right. You can still win with Connor McDavid and those guys and paying them that much. You just have to figure out the rest of your team, man.
I don't want to dive too deep because I think it's a bigger conversation we should have next episode, but, like, it's tough because playoff hockey is so good. But the idea that it is basically designed to prevent your biggest stars from shining does corrupt the sport.
I was like, I do get what that other part. Sport, it does kind of fuck with everything.
In what other sport are your biggest stars, like, sidelined in the playoffs, you know?
You're sorry, we'll just let them grab you and shit. It is kind of annoying. It's like, yo, this was a penalty, and it still is something they shouldn't be allowed to do. But, like, yeah, but, like, if we call all that, then the playoffs are boring. It's like, no, then there's a crazy amount of...
then it's just 7-6.
Yeah, there's crazy amount of power plays. Like, it's just... I think that's right. I think I was telling you earlier, I worry that if they call the playoffs just like they call the regular season, the playoffs won't be as fun.
Yeah.
But I think there's still a middle ground there because, it does seem like a lot of these teams that have star players on them just aren't the same in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. And I know there's people that are listening that are like, well, you know, tough shit. And it's like, I get that too. It's kind of the weird mix of, like, it should be a faster hitting, harder game, but you shouldn't make that neuter all of your players.
Like, see, Edmonton hasn't built that good a team.
That's what I mean.
But you should be able to think that having Connor McDavid on your team can get you to the second round.
Right. You know? That's what, like, I mean. I'm like, there's no, like, that shouldn't be a fucking sweep.
Yeah, that's a little woof. And then finally, Trophy Pants asks, is the show ever going to get better? And if you're talking about Sony Studios MLB The Show, actually, I think this is one of the best installment in years. However, if you're talking about our show, God, we're trying.
We're trying, man. I thought we've established that.
We got the new microphone. It's very fancy. People,
not good enough for you.
Oh, these people.
Again,
want more.
If you need better, if you want better from us, just put, bills.
Yeah.
And, money. paper money, preferably not coins, into
an envelope. During the coin shortage, you never know.
They could be worth more.
Or, you know what, just send us lumber. Apparently, that's very expensive right now.
As many 2x4s as you can get your hands on.
One bag. I think we can power through the rest of these questions real quick. Justice Beaver asks us, how bad is the rebuild going to be if they actually go the blue-collar route and trade Vlad and Dunn? Bad. But that's kind of, we talked a lot about the rebuild. I think they should trade Dunn. I don't want them to trade Dunn. I want them to build a team where he's a star. Mm-hmm. But they're not gonna. So, you gotta get something for him and not lose him for free in the expansion draft.
Sadly, I think if they trade Dunn and Tarasenko,
they wouldn't call it a rebuild.
That's still not a rebuild.
Yeah. Yeah. Grant Early asks, how do you feel about people calling St. Louis the Lou? If Nelly does it, it's okay. Yeah. Nobody else.
Otherwise, if I just saw someone on the street and they were like, well, I was hanging out in Chicago, but I had to come back to the Lou, and I'd be like, what? Also, that's the bathroom over in the UK.
That's true.
So don't call it that.
You're calling us a turlet.
But also do call it that, because that is kind of what the city feels like sometimes. I love St. Louis, but it is also the husk of a better city.
Yeah.
Of a city that once was.
Adam Lubert, our mutual good friend Adam.
Adam fled the city years ago.
Oh, he got out. And it was primarily because of people calling it the Lou.
You said it's the Lou? And I'm fucking gone.
Say it loud, I'm from the Lou and I'm out of here. he asks, what three rule changes would you like to see the NHL make this offseason? That's a tough one. Puck over the glass. I'm over it. I know that people feel differently. I don't know why everything else is a judgment call and this isn't. I just don't get it. It shouldn't be automatic.
Too much thinking.
I probably would get rid of the trapezoid.
Yeah.
And I am a big believer, and I know it's one of yours, in make power plays again.
Yeah.
Don't make them end after a goal.
Yeah, I definitely think they should be, it should be like a major. It should be like, hey, if you score a minute into a 2-minute minor, then you still got another minute to score. Yeah. And that's just going to be more incentive not to commit a penalty. And it's going to be higher scoring games. If you want higher scoring and more fun and everything, for an outside audience, that's what you should do.
Yeah. The more I think about it, too, it's not really a rule change because the rules are there. They're just not calling them. But, you got to start calling some penalties in the playoffs.
Yeah.
Again, the Oilers could be a better team.
Yeah.
But it sucks that a guy who had an all-time great season just couldn't do anything in the playoffs because there were just no penalties called against him. The only way anyone can stop him is by committing penalties.
I was going to say, I'd feel better about a Jets team beating the Oilers if they neutralized McDavid and I was like, shit, and that was pretty legal.
Yeah.
And they did that legally. Shit, that's an amazing performance. Right. So it's no, they just grabbed this dude and did everything they could to get him to fall over. It's I guess that's how you do that.
Yeah.
One of mine was definitely keep power plays going, even if you score. Another one was if you go in offsides, on an uncalled offsides, and you're in there for 10 seconds, and you score, they can't review it because it was enough has transpired. Everyone made it back in the zone. There's just no, it's just so annoying to have a goal called off. They're we're going to check for offsides. I'm when? And it's 30 seconds ago. I'm what?
Offsides is only an advantage for maybe your first shot attempt, by that time you're set up.
Especially too, because a lot of kind of a judgment call thing. It's if they're crazy offsides, but sometimes they're centimeters off, and it's this did not change this.
Yeah.
It was a great attempt. Well done.
Yeah.
And then the other one that I think Jeff Merrick had on 31 Thoughts was, I think it would be good if you end a period on a power play, that when the new period starts, instead of the opening face-off being at center ice, they do it in the offensive zone of the team that's on the power play. Because it's hey man, we're going to give you that little more advantage that you're already actually in the zone. Again, it's to power up the power play.
Mm-hmm.
Power play squared.
Yeah. I've said this before, I would completely outlaw fighting, but I know that's not popular. but I just think it's...
The listeners are turning it off.
I'm sure they
will. They're turning off.
The cats are angry. Cats love to fight. Juice asks a really good question. I almost think we should make next episode kind of answer it, not to not give him an answer, but...
Hey, the juice is loose.
How do the blues... Careful. With... We've made it so far.
I'm not going to do another episode of you giving me all those shitty OJ takes again.
Marcia Clark did her best, Ian. Marcia Clark did her best. It is too late. We have been here too long. And we just got the title of the episode, I'm pretty sure. How do the Blues, with their current roster and cap outlook, get better? How do they build or set up their defense to have a legit top pair? How do they address the top line left wing? I think it'd be cool if next week we actually tried to build the team instead of just saying, oh, they got to do this or that. What if we tried to actually create the team and work it out?
Yeah.
Maybe over 1 year, maybe over 2 years, you give a look at, if we think it's a little bit of a rebuild, maybe it's a 2 years process, but I think that'd be fun.
I like that idea. Good
so, Juice, you are loose. If you will bear with us, I think that'd be a great idea for an episode. A. Weisenfeld tells us, here's a hot take. If we could keep Ryan O'Reilly, I would legitimately trade our entire team for Buffalo's entire team, including their draft pick.
I mean, we would manage that roster.
Here's the
better.
Thing. Eichel, for sure. Reinhardt, for sure.
Have your surgery, buddy.
Dahlin, probably. Ristolainen, I don't know. their prospects and picks... Great.
Yeah.
But I do think generally the idea that we would do better with their roster and our management than they would do with our roster and their management, for sure. But that's a given, That's if you tell a kid to work the oven, and then they cook themselves. That's pretty much what I was saying. Oh, and Jeff Gaffney asks, with the current roster minus any major changes, what style best suits this team? Isles counterattacking? It's not Berube's style. I think it's taking more shots and getting rebounds.
Yeah, for sure.
I don't.
Well, that's the thing.
This
we were
isn't
what
a team...
we were low. We were the lowest. We were 31st in high danger chances. So no one's going to the dirty areas at all.
Yeah, it's just.
When we won the cup, I checked, we were ninth.
He wants a team... He's such an enigma to me, because he wants this team... He always is shot quality, not shot quantity. But then, he doesn't unleash the players that can make that happen.
Mm.
He doesn't highlight Torrey Krug as much as he could. He doesn't put Robert Thomas and Jordan Kyrou on top lines. He didn't use Mike Hoffman at all. And it's this isn't a team. This is a team that's more built for that than they were before. But it's still not that built for that. And I just think his offensive system is garbage.
That just reminds me when Hitchcock was trying to get us to sit on leads. And one goal leads. And we couldn't do that. So I was why are we even doing the thing we can't do?
Yeah.
I don't understand Berube. Doesn't feel... Maybe it's just, a book being, different than the cover, but it's
that's the old expression.
That's how
sometimes
it's
books are different on the cover.
Sometimes, the cover of the sleeve is different than what's underneath the sleeve. I thought of something else. Okay. No, I was just saying, Berube just doesn't seem the type, from the player he was and
to
the person
ever
he is.
Evolve or change.
Well, that too. But just to be hey, we need those perfect shots, guys. No.
It seems so out of character.
No offense. I get these people are amazing at hockey, but Craig Berube's never taken a perfect shot.
Yeah.
So, I thought I'd for sure be dude, we just got to bang these dudes behind the net and just go ham on trying to get the puck in the blue paint. And that's the strategy. But no, instead it's this kind of weird... finesse game, and like you said, that he's not willing to fully commit to. Yeah. So I'm like, yeah, dude, like, that's great if you want the best shots, but we go tell Doug Armstrong we need better players too then, because it's not working.
Yeah.
I really hope that goes, like, if there's one thing I hope it goes away next year, it's that perfect shot mentality, because
that's just a that is obviously failed.
Yeah.
It frustrates me when guys have, like, clearly failed.
That high danger thing is like...
He showed no willingness to change it either, you know?
That high danger thing sticks out to me really bad. Especially, it sticks in my mind when people talk about this team needs to improve on defense. I'm like, you're right. But if you think that's the number one thing, then I don't think so, man.
Yeah.
Like, you might not need to get a different forward. You're going to need to, because you're going to need a different left wing when Schwartz goes away. But... You might not need to get a different forward, but you need to tell all of them, yo, the strategy is now different. We now need to have a guy in front of the net. That's so frustrating, man. They don't even have someone doing that. Like, we'll have maybe one guy kind of screening, and they both peel off way too quick, and they're both just kind of by the goalie.
We just don't look creative or good in the offensive zone at all. And
it's I know there's, whatever it is now, 27 other teams looking at the playoffs as well, but it's like, you watch this and you go, there's a clear reason the Avs and the Knights and even like the Islanders and the Lightning and the Hurricanes and all these other teams that moved on are better than the Blues, because they just play an up-tempo game and they're willing to go to the dirty areas to score. And that opens shit up, right? Like, just because you're going to the blue paint doesn't mean this is the only way we score, guys. It's just like, it's the whole thing of if you get it down low, opens the shot up high, right? Like, if you have options, they don't know where you're going to come at them with. But if you're not doing anything in front of the net, they go, well, this team's just going to fucking shoot from the outside. I guess we'll just five-man it in the middle of the ice. The Blues would never, ever, ever... beat the fucking Habs this year.
No,
ever. 100 games played, 100 games lost. Because all they do is like, well,
they're better, but
they're, because it's just the strategy of like, well, I guess we'll five man in the slot and Carey Price will just sit here and get peppered by Justin Pockshot from outside the blue line, because that's the Blues strategy. So to answer this question, I think they need to use almost any team's other strategy. Because
this strategy is completely failed.
Yeah.
This is like back when we were doing the zone defense strategy.
Jesus, yeah.
Or man-to-man. It wasn't zone. And like even Vera Jackson was like chirping them in the pages of The Athletic of like, yeah, this isn't going to work. And they just stuck to it until Mike Yeo got fired.
I'm
Vera
Jackman, and I know something about shit defense.
Yeah, I'm an expert on that topic. Let me talk to you. But, just, you got to change it. And, you know, that's the Blues in a nutshell. You got to do something different, because what you did this year, it didn't work. And what you did last year, ultimately, it didn't work either. So I don't want another year of it didn't work, but we're also no closer to being better in the future, because that's when you're starting to talk about you have to retool.
That is the thing, too, where like I feel like this year they got to do, obviously, some retooling. But I think next year if they get to the first round and they just don't look competitive again, like, it'll be a sweep, but, you know, 5-6 games even, and they just kind
of
look shit.
What was it against Vancouver? 5? It was 4, but it was a best-of-3 series, right?
Was it?
Or best of 5 series?
Oh, yeah.
For that intro round?
I think you're right.
Oh, wait, did we... No, we got a bye in the intro round.
Was it 6 games? Was it the old, good old 6 gamer?
Yeah.
I think it was. I think if they lose in the first round next season, I don't know, man. I think they got to really contemplate a rebuild at that point. Because it's like 3 in a row, and it's different than the 3 in a row that like preceded it leading up to the Blues winning a cup, where it's like,
those teams were on the rise.
Well, that's what I mean. Those teams were on the rise. It was like, man, we just can't break through. It's like a Maple Leafs thing, right? You have to recognize where we are in the trajectory of like how you build a team and where your cup window is. We're on the back end at that point. You can't be like, no, we're on the upswing again.
That's not true, Paul.
I know, that's not true, Paul. You gotta look. I don't know. And Doug Armstrong is a smart dude. Look at your prospect pool. Maybe they can say after the draft, but if today they were like, I don't know, it's pretty deep. But like, that's fucking bullshit. Don't lie to me. You know that's not true. You know this team, like, I don't know. I agree with Friedman where he was talking about, like, Doug Armstrong knows what he has and he's not going to be happy. with how this team played in the playoffs. And if he makes a couple moves and they still don't work out, I'm not going to say it's on him, but like he's going to be extra pissed, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, I just don't see him sitting there for too long and be like, eh, we'll see what happens. And I'm glad he's not going to be that way, hopefully, because then he's not complacent and saying, ah, we won a cup and no big deal.
Well, rest assured, rest easy, Blues fans, because Matthew Tkachuk is a restricted free agent again after next season, and there was a report this week that he would love to play in St. Louis someday. So
I'm sure
we can hang all our hopes on
that. He's 36.
It's certainly not just a ploy to get more money out of Calgary. Brady is an RFA this year, and we know what happens to Ottawa players when they have to start to pay them money. So
right.
Could be sooner than you think that the Thomas Tkachuk line is a thing.
Thomas Tkachuk.
So I love it. I want Matthew Tkachuk.
That's what I was complaining. I love it.
Folks, it's been a long we've recorded
it's been a whirlwind.
Three plus hours of content for the people, as Dane would say. I would like any
what a timely reference.
Please, folks, send your money in the mail.
Yeah.
Your topics, to anyone. Your topics, anybody. Who cares? Just Venmo us. Don't find us on Venmo. You don't know our names. But and if you would, please, anyone who would like to write for me a dissertation about why Marcia Clark was actually a fairly competent attorney in the O.J. Simpson trial, you know, you can do that, too. She wasn't. It's no. Not true, but she tried so hard.
Much like this podcast. We're the real Marcia Clark.
We are the Marcia Clarks of the podcast. Folks, it's 12:17, Friday morning. We're getting out of here. Thank you for listening. Have a great week.
They listen, they hear all will happen. In the end, they say, O.J. not guilty.
Not guilty.
They weigh the evidence, listen to the defense. Still, the jury say, O.J. not guilty.
Not guilty.
O.J. blood was found in the Bronco. On the glove, the gate, the socks also. But big struggle in the yard. The jury found it hard. The socks ain't had no mud and too much EDTA in the damn blood. The blood that was missing, O.J. not guilty.
Not guilty.
The Bronco they break in, O.J. not guilty.
Not guilty.
The socks they tamper with, O.J. not guilty.
Not guilty.
Cochran said the glove didn't fit him. You have to acquit him.
Not guilty.